The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
You're listening to the Blackshaw Arts Hour, and we are recording not in the studio this evening, aren't we, Matt?
That's correct.
No, yeah. We're in my living room today, which is nice, and Matt's a little bit ill, but he's still with me.
Tiny bit. It makes a change from you being ill.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the normal state of things.
Yes, that is true. You do sound a little bit not normal, not yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying it on. Tweet us at Blackshaw Update. Let me know if this voice is better than my usual.
He's trying really hard, actually. He's trying really, really hard to make it not a big thing. So coming up on this week's show, we're going to hear a bit of a Scare Slam recording from the last Scare Slam that we did, because we've got one coming up in October, I believe.
Sort of scary month.
It is a scary month, and it's the horror festival, so that's why we're doing that. And we're also going to hear a piece of new writing that we both saw on Monday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The latest Blackshaw New Writing Night.
Yeah. So also, if you like new writing and you couldn't make it on Monday, we're going to be putting out all of the pieces from this last New Writing Night that just happened on Monday. We're going to put them out as their own podcast, so you can listen to all of them whenever you want, which is cool. And also for the writers, they can listen to their pieces back live, or as live, on the radio.
In case they just want to obsess over every little word and nuance and cadence and yeah, maybe just rewrite everything.
Maybe that's not the best for the writers. Anyway, we're doing it, so, you know, that's great. Yeah. But no, we're going to hear a great piece that was on Monday. It was a good night, wasn't it?
It's my
first time that I've been when we're at the Hen and Chickens, and it's such a cool venue.
It is.
Makes us look really, like, yeah, professional.
I mean, we love the Horse and Stables. We don't want to say anything bad about them, but the Hen and Chickens is, it's different. It's it's a proper, like, theatre rake in the space.
Did I tell you that I was talking to one of the guys that was in one of the pieces, and we were just outside having a cigarette, and he performed in the Horse and Stables doing an improv night like 20 years ago with Eddie Izzard.
Wow.
He like shared the same stage.
Huh.
He was on like, well, probably he opened for Eddie Izzard, but he was telling me all about it. And I was like, that's so cool.
I never knew we were in such like hallowed company in the Horse and Stables.
I guess that's kind of what happens when you go and like you do a venue like the Hen and Chickens, and there's sort of, you get more people that are sort of into it, and like, you know, that's been such a long-standing theatre venue.
Yeah, it's a bit more like London theatre scene.
Totally, yeah. It's a really cool vibe there. You should come next time. That's what I'm trying to say in this in this ramble. So yeah, that's what's coming up on the show. But the first thing that we always do on the show is this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
So, Matt, what are you reviewing this week?
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yes, which I'd never heard of.
No, it's on a reasonably limited release. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those ones that I couldn't just go to my local cinema webpage and book for it. I had to go to, like, the Hunt for the Wilder People Showtimes website.
Oh, really?
And, like, find what cinemas in London it was actually playing in.
Did you have to go far to see it?
Not too far, no. Okay. But I had to go to a multiplex, which I don't. I normally go to like my local indie.
Oh.
So I had to go to a big cinema.
Oh dear.
But like the smallest screen in the big cinema.
It's like 10 people room.
Yeah.
It's like the basement.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the attic.
Oh right. Okay. Fact, yeah. Even better.
In Stratford View.
Mm,
yeah.
Lovely.
So this is it's the latest film from Taika Waititi, director,
mm-hmm.
Who did What We Do in the Shadows. Which I liked a lot, which is on Netflix if anybody wants to watch it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that, and yeah, it's fantastic.
Silly vampire mock documentary.
If you've seen Flight of the Conchords, then you'd like it, basically.
Pretty much,
yeah.
Yeah. A couple of those same people are in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going on now on a really weird film trajectory to do Thor 3.
Oh, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, I'm really intrigued to see it. Like, the Thor films of the Marvel movies, and this is a very short digression because we do superheroes a lot, of the Marvel movies, Thor is kind of the one I'm least into, but knowing that he's directing the next one makes me really want to see it, because he's got a kind of quirky, bizarre
style. He's got a style. Yeah, that's going to be weird. Yeah, I agree with the Thor thing. Yeah. I've fallen asleep in them about 15 times. I try so hard, but it just never works for me. Anyway.
So so the setup in Hunt for the Wilder People is basically through a series of misunderstandings and unfortunate circumstances. A foster kid, tween called Ricky Baker, played by Julian Dennison, who's a kind of newbie, ends up on the run in the New Zealand bush with his grumpy foster uncle, Sam Neill, or Heck, short for Hector. And they find themselves, through no real fault of their own, the subject of a national manhunt through the bush. And so they're just doing their sort of survivalist thing, trying not to be taken by the man who's going to, like, lock up Hector and send Ricky to juvie. and they're running from the New Zealand police and the ridiculously vindictive child welfare services person, Paula Hall. And it's kind of like that's basically the whole story. Is they accidentally end up on the run and are on the run for the whole movie, and that's pretty much it. And, you know, how else could it end? That it ends when they get, when they eventually sort of meet with the people who are chasing them. But it's sort of a movie about how easy it is for people to make a big fuss out of nothing. Like, it starts with child welfare services person Paula Hall running down Ricky's list of misdemeanors, and like she calls him a really bad egg. And it's all he's known for stealing stuff and kicking stuff over and spitting and graffitiing and all these sorts of things that are like pretty minor misdemeanors for a like a 13-year-old in the big city. Like he's like not a model person, not a model teenager. But like it's not like he's a real wild child, uncontrollable sort of type.
He's not burning down houses.
No, exactly. He's not going, like, he's not, he kind of wants to, he sees himself as a gangster. But he's actually kind of soft when it comes to that sort of stuff. So it starts with sort of her blowing him out of proportion and then just keeps escalating from there to them, like, blowing the two of them being on the run out of proportion to the point that they're being hunted by like full SWAT teams and eventually the army and tanks and helicopters.
Seems a little unnecessary, I feel. I watched the trailer just recently for this film because I hadn't heard about it. But I do remember that last time on the show we were saying that this was a Reese Rice Darby sort of that bunch of people film. But no, it looks super cute, and it does remind me a lot of like Flight of the Conchords, all that kind of stuff. And just like listening to that New Zealand accent just makes things 10 times funnier.
Yeah.
Like when she calls him a bad egg, she says egg. Like, you're a bad egg. It's great. But no, it looks really cute. And it's funny seeing Sam Neill in that character, I think.
I think so. Like, he's basically playing the grumpy old man from Up. Like the premise is really similar to Up, apart from like the fantasy elements with the house flying away on the balloons and that sort of stuff, and the spies or whatever the bad guys ended up being. But it is that similar thing of like the grumpy old man who just wants to kind of be alone and get away from society, and so he says he's going to go bush.
That's a thing that we say, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere. That's a well-known term.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. So the grumpy old man who just wants to sort of be alone, be left alone, meeting up with the young kid and ending up accidentally on a sort of odd couple thing, except that in this, the young kid is also kind of a grump.
Yeah.
Like, he's not as happy-go-lucky as the young kid in Up.
Sure. So why is Sam Neill running away in the first place? What's his shtick?
Oh, he's... I'm trying not to give spoilers.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not running away until they accidentally end up being hunted for stuff they didn't do.
Right.
So when he's actually running away, it's because of misunderstanding. All he's trying to sort of get away from is he just wants to be on his own for a bit.
He's a bit of a loner. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And they're both people who like society doesn't really want. Ricky is sort of being pinballed around the foster system.
Yeah.
And Hector is like the bushman type who, like, he can do a bit of farm work, but he's not really good for much else. And so the whole thing is, it's them on the run, and they sort of end up half staying on the run because people are chasing them and they just feel like they have to get away from those people, but half because when they know that when they stop running, they just have to go back to kind of being in a society that they don't really fit into.
Sure, right.
And it's all about kind of how that is, those situations are kind of a way for people to self-aggrandize and play out their fantasies. Like, because they're in this sort of Wild West sort of situation where none of the rules really apply, like Ricky can indulge his gangster fantasies, mm-hmm. and Het can be a bushman, and Paula Hall can be like a RoboCop Terminator type who keeps yelling, "No child left behind," and like giving orders as if she's a copper when she's actually just the child welfare person.
Right.
Sort of thing. So it's an opportunity for everybody to be these things that they aren't normally.
Isn't No Child Left Behind a government policy that's always being implemented every Labour government?
Yeah, that's a gag.
Great. Political.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, and like, it in sort of tone and the way that it hits you, it's kind of, it's got poignant moments and funny moments, but mm-hmm. no, like, I didn't find any, like, properly heart-wrenching moments or properly hilarious moments. It's kind of...
treading the fence a bit.
Yeah, like you say, it's cute.
Yeah.
It makes you go sort of awe.
Is it like feel good?
Yeah,
but...
it's feel good, but it's not like really, really heightened emotion. It's partly because those two characters, they're both kind of emotionally non-demonstrative people.
Sure, yeah.
Like they'll both sort of put up tough fronts and not really let people see how they're really feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole movie almost takes on that feeling from them.
Right. Is it worth seeing
I think so, yeah,
with limited release. I wonder how it was received, like, just generally, because I haven't heard much about it.
No,
it seems to be like quite an indie kind of thing coming out of New Zealand that everyone's like, huh, look at these funny guys, they talk funny, like, you know, what we did in The Shadows was kind of a film like that as well.
Yeah,
New Zealand are doing some quite good stuff though, I think, a lot more than what Australia puts out, which I find quite upsetting, but you know, New Zealand are a better country than Australia, so we just have to live with that.
That must have been very hard for you to say.
It's very difficult for me to say, but you know, we all know it's correct, so yeah. why not just say it? Thank you very much, Matt, for another fantastic review. I'm going to ask you later on in the show what you're going to be doing in 2 weeks' time, because I know that I annoy you at every end of your review when I do that. But we are going to talk a little bit now about something that happened recently, which was quite a big event, which was the Emmys.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about it in the sense that, well, I did you watch it, Matt?
I didn't. No, I just caught some of the chat about the winners and losers and nominees and performances afterwards.
Well, see, yeah, I didn't catch it either. I'm not sure. Was it on our television?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm famously unaware of what's on actually live. I only watch catch up.
Yeah, well, it makes sense that we're going to be talking about the Emmys then.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see it either, but I saw lots of reviews of it and lists of it and BuzzFeed things about it.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing that came out of it that everyone was excited about was the Stranger Things. If anyone's seen that, it's on Netflix. You need to watch it because it'll blow your mind and change your life. The kids.
I'm still behind.
I know. I can't believe that you are. It's just it's incredible. But no, I think the biggest thing that came out was just everyone going nuts about these kids who, you know, are super young, who carry this entire Netflix series, and they just completely rocked the entire Emmys, and they're 12.
Like, and the fact that they're the big story from the, well, they're one of the big stories from
and
the
Emmys.
And
they're not even nominated.
And they're not even nominated for anything, because I don't think Stranger Things can be nominated until next year.
No, that's correct. Which is going to be crazy, because these are kids who are so young, and they're going to be up for, like, you know, I mean, the girl that plays, I can't remember her name, which is really bad of me, but she plays Elle.
Oh, no.
And she's just brilliant. She's going to be fantastic as she gets older. But some of the other things, I think...
you go on.
The biggest one, I think, for me, the biggest win, I think, was Sarah Paulson.
Uh-huh.
In the O.J. Simpson trial case thing. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Oh, Matt, you need to see that also. It's brilliant. But I mean, Sarah's been doing loads of stuff, and she's been doing series and series and series of this American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And she's never, I don't think she's ever won an Emmy for either of those. So that's good that she won.
Yeah.
She's a brilliant actress, and her character in OJ was just incredible.
The one for me was finally Tatiana Maslany won one for Orphan Black.
Yes, and this is a show that people are sort of talking about, but no one's actually watching.
Yeah, so you're berating me for all the things I haven't seen. Yeah. This is the one that I get to berate you back about, because I'm kind of obsessive about this show. So this is the show about clones, where Tatiana Maslany plays all the clones.
Right.
So she's listed as... her win is Tatiana Maslany as Sarah Manning, Alison Hendricks, Cosima Niehaus, Beth Childs, Rachel Duncan, and MK on Orphan Black.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
I don't think that's even all the people she plays, but it's just all the people she plays in the one episode that you're allowed to nominate for the Emmys.
Oh wow. That's incredible. I really need to watch that.
Yeah, I think... first of all, it's amazing that it's taken this long for her to win one, considering it, like, this is its fourth season.
Wow, I didn't realise that. Yeah. Okay.
And they've announced that the next season is going to be the last one. And I think that might be why she's won it this year, because they've gone, this is probably our last
this is chance, our last chance.
To give her an Emmy for this role.
Yeah.
That she really deserves.
She does deserve it.
Yeah.
Just put that in there. It's not just the Emmy people just being like, oh, well, you know, I guess we should probably give it one at some point.
And the other thing was Game of Thrones has broken a big record now.
Oh, of course it did.
Or I think it equaled someone else's, that it's got the most Emmys in a year, in a single year. Or most Emmys ever for a single show, I think was the record.
That makes sense. We'll look up that stat and get it to you at the end of the show. Is it most Emmys ever?
I think it's most collective, like across several years of
which
ceremonies.
Makes sense, because how long have we been dealing with bloody Game of Thrones for?
Like, well, it's what, season 6 was the latest one?
Yeah.
So 6 years.
Six. We're going on to 7.
And it's been getting awards pretty consistently since its first year.
It's the kind of show that makes me go, like, when it's actually on and it's happening and you're, you know, halfway through those 10 episodes, it's brilliant. And you want, like, it's all you want to talk about with people on, like, Wednesday when we... Yeah, Wednesdays. But then when it's not on, I'm so done. I'm so over it. I'm like, I don't want to watch this show. I don't want to wait so long for it. That's the problem. And I think that one of the most incredible things I think about the Emmys now is the fact that we're not just talking about television that is, you know, just on TV.
It's not just broadcast anymore.
Yeah, like we're talking about, you know, shows just made for Netflix, which I'm not... Orphan Black is not one of those, is it?
The latest season was. It started on BBC America, and then I think BBC America dropped it, and it was picked up by Netflix for more seasons.
Right, yeah. That just blows my mind that that's the kind of content that we're making
these
days.
Yeah, and that shows can make that jump now. That if the network they're on doesn't want them anymore, but there's enough
if they're getting the fans. If they're getting the talent and pulling these big names in to do Netflix original series, then... why wouldn't they be included in Emmy's awarded shows? Yeah. It's really cool. Who won, do you know off the top of your head, who won the male?
It was Rami Malek for Mr. Robot.
Oh, right. I was talking to, have you seen any of that?
No, it's a show that that Tumblr advertises to me incessantly, but I've not actually, I've not bitten yet.
I was talking to someone the other day who started it and said the first... maybe a couple of episodes is fantastic, but then it doesn't get anywhere great.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hot tip for you there.
Apparently,
you know.
he's an Emmy-winning performance.
Well, there you go. There you go. So that was that's the Emmys.
Yeah.
We've done that
for this year.
Yeah, we've ticked that off the list. That's the arts thing that we.
It's the beginning of awards season. It's awards from here on in. We're gearing up for the Oscars again.
Oh, God, I hate Oscars films. I really don't like Oscars films.
No.
I just find them... and I think we were talking before about like what's coming up and coming out at the cinemas. The Girl on the Train, I think, is definitely an Oscar film. Like, that performance
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt, that's the one. I only said Jessica Blunt. That's not a person. that performance is definitely going to be one of those Oscar-winning performances, and she'll be nominated for it. But it's just so... obvious. Like, they're just making these films. They're putting them out at the right time. And
it could be an interesting year because they, after the big uproar of last year's Oscars, they've invited a load of extra people, a load of new people into the Academy now.
Yeah.
So a load of new people can vote now.
Mm-hmm.
So we might get a shake-up. Who knows?
Hopefully. And the uproar last year was that it was hashtag white Oscars, right?
Yeah, Oscars so white.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm so excited for the Oscars this year. See if they can turn that around. Okay, well, the thing that's coming up now that we're going to play for you is a bit of a Scare Slam story. We did our first Scare Slam last November at the Horse and Stables. This year, we are doing the Scare Slam at the Old Red Lion Theatre. It's going to be a part of the London Horror Festival, actually, and it's on Monday, the 17th of October. So basically, like, in a month's time. And you can submit your writing or your scary story to us if you jump onto our website, blackshoreonline.com, or if you follow us on Twitter, Blackshore Update,
yeah,
or follow us on Facebook. It's all there online.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be more than an idea. You don't have to submit like a complete text. You can just say, I want to tell a story that is vaguely about this thing.
Exactly. Or, as Ellie was saying, as she was comparing on Monday night at the New Writing Night, you could literally just submit a list of scary words.
Yeah.
And we could maybe develop that. Or you could just read scary words out on stage, if you can think of enough. They could fill 5 minutes. So yeah, this is a Scare Slam story to get you in the mood for our Scare Slam, which is happening on Monday, the 17th of October.
I'm Richard. I was doing the sound. I was recording everything. And then Alison earlier was telling a story about this girl that she saw, and it reminded me of something. In fact, it reminded me of three things that have happened at different points in my life, which, like, I was listening to your story, and I was like, because I had the headphones in, so in some ways I have had an even more intimate experience than any of you. Your pains at kicking, particularly, ow. So I was listening to this, and I'm afraid I didn't hear parts of your story because, like a puzzle in my mind, these things were coming back to me. And so kind of three, and I will try and keep them short, stories. One, amusing, because I was small, and what seems scary then is really not scary now. One that I now realize at a young age perhaps was quite more... perhaps I was a little more insightful than a 6 to 8 year old probably should have been. And then one that happened 2 years ago that I didn't combine with everything else, which is now going to make me a little scared when I go to sleep. So thank you. So first story. I'm around 6 or 8, and I had a nightmare, as many 6 to 8 year olds do, I suppose. And this particular nightmare, and I'm not entirely sure where this came from, as I'm sure most people that have nightmares, you know, you can kind of guess where maybe some of these scary images came from. But honestly, other than I went to a shop, I don't understand where this was. The nightmare was essentially me in a supermarket. And instead of produce being scanned, members of my family were being scanned by this devilish kind of woman who it's funny because the more I think about it, the more vivid it becomes and how things kind of stick in your head. But this devilish woman that was part of the scan, like the whole setup of the shop. She wasn't sitting on the chair. She was part of the chair, like she was rooted to the ground. And she was just, she picked up my sister and beep. And I can't remember what she turned into, but she turned into something. And that scared me. And I remember being at the end of this, of the kind of queue of my family, as though we were all lining up not to have our shopping scanned, but to be scanned. And so, beep, there goes my sister, and she turns into something. And then my mother, and she goes, beep, and she, I remember this, she turns into a chair, which, although isn't a particularly scary object, freaked the out of me, because my mother was suddenly a chair and she's just kind of placed in the bagging area. Like, And although this was not a thing, but I was thinking of this, and all I could think was unusual item in the bagging area. And then my dad comes along, beep, and he becomes a haystack, which is slightly more weird and slightly more scary, because I don't know, this chair like was a recognizable object, but haystacks, I grew up in the country, but still it was kind of weird. And then it was me, and then I turned up and I went beep, and I turned into Uncle Fester from the Addams Family. And then I ran from the store as the only suddenly animate object in there, still human and with legs. And I ran and I joined the Addams Family and looked out of a window down this winding road towards the supermarket, I presume, where all my family had been turned into things, and just kind of stared mournfully as Fester at the place where my sister had been turned into something I can't remember, and my mother had become a chair and my father had become a haystack. And then I woke up in a cold sweat and just like screamed. It was my first memory of being truly terrified as a child, and as an adult I find it quite funny. And I remember like explaining this to my parents, and they were like, oh, there's nothing to be scared of, it was just a dream. It wasn't in the real world, this is never going to happen. You know, we can't become chairs and haystacks, and that was fine. And I went to sleep the nights knowing that, okay, yeah, there's this separation, right, between nightmares, between dreams, and between reality. And for several years, that was fine. And it was perhaps like I feel like I was scared of nightmares, but I could deal with them, right? I could wake up and I can go, that was a nightmare, that wasn't real, that's fine. Like, I would call for mum and she'd go, it was a nightmare, and I'd go, okay, that's fine, that's a nightmare. And that was fine for several years, and it was probably maybe 12, 13, like early teenage at best. And I remember clear as day, and I'll preface this with, I don't believe in ghosts, right? I love scary stories, I like fear, but I am the most skeptic person you will probably find. Like, if someone says they're psychic, like, that is the reaction I have. But I woke up, and I was lying in like this single bed, and there was my desk here, and there were these my shelves here with my CD player, with my cassette tape, because I'm also old, of audiobooks, Harry Potter, in there. I used to go to sleep with those. And I looked up, and if you could imagine just kind of waking up, like, on your back, which is a weird thing, I think, because usually I wake up on the side, or, like, not like you're in a coffin, that kind of like proper on your back, straight up as though you've been positioned there. And right above me, I saw this woman in a rocking chair floating like maybe 2-3 feet above me, knitting. And I remember just waking up and going, okay, right, I know about nightmares. Those are the things that happen when you're asleep. But now I'm in my room and I know I'm awake and I can see this woman floating at me, but that's probably fine because this is probably some sort of hallucination. I've come out of a dream and this has followed me out of my dream, and I'm kind of, all this is going through my head in this kind of split second. And I've pretty much rationalized it and like, no, this is not real. And I'm staring up at her, still kind of in this kind of coffin, kind of as I've been laid out to be buried, and then oh, I hate her. Then she looks at me, looks at me and smiles, and in that second I'm like, no, I can't rationalize this. It was for a second this kind of image, this floating apparition in front of me, but now there is eye contact. This is real. And again, I freaked the out again. My parents both, which is very rare because usually it's one or the other, right? Because one of them goes, oh, it's your turn, he's you know, playing up again or whatever. But no, they clearly, this was such an extreme outburst of I don't know what, of fear, of emotion, of whatever, that they come dashing into my room like, what is it? And I was like, there was this woman. And again, like, the first time since I had that talk about the haystacks and everything, the first time since that moment, I had to sit with my parents and go, okay, this still wasn't real. Like, we don't know, like, whatever it was, whatever happened, this wasn't real. She wasn't there. It was fine. You were dreaming. You woke up. It was just your imagination, you know. Women do not sit in rocking chairs knitting above you. It's like 12-year-old kids. And then when they wake up, look down at them, smile, and then apparently disappear. This isn't a thing that happens to people, although, of course, to me at that point, it had happened to me. But again, even as a 12-year-old, perhaps skeptic, I was like, yes, no, this can't be... There is better explanations. The haystack happened in a dream. Lady can happen outside of a dream for that few seconds it happened. And I went back to sleep, and everything was fine until 2 years ago. I went to California for work for 2 years. 2 years, 2 weeks. Felt like 2 years. No, I went there, and so I was in this hotel. And I was like, jet lag is a thing. Obviously, you wake up right middle of the night, 3 o'clock or whatever. And so I hadn't got into the whole thing of when I should wake up. So I wake up, and there was no dream. I think there may have been with the old lady, and obviously there was for the haystack. But there was no dream. I just woke up, and it was a very peaceful. I woke very peacefully. It wasn't a sudden, you know, when you're asleep and then suddenly you're awake. And that's usually what you have with a nightmare, right, or a dream. It's like there's this sudden transition between seeing this one reality and then coming back to what's real. And that didn't happen. I kind of came out of it as though you would if you were naturally waking up. It was kind of very gentle, and I kind of felt my eyes kind of open. And if you can imagine waking up and seeing somebody, like, right here. Like, if you were to turn to the person next to you right now and close your eyes, and then they move towards you at a kind of a distance that you weren't expecting, and then after a few seconds you open your eyes and you see that person, like, right there, like, those big eyes, and you, like, but now imagine you didn't realize you were sitting next to someone and you didn't know your eyes were closed. That's what, like, I woke up and right, maybe as I look at the mic now, great radio, but probably like here, like there, like, I don't know, about a foot or something, there was this face. And it was this... It's kind of funny. I'm pretty sure it's like a young girl, probably, and this is why your story reminded me of this. And it was kind of something I put in the back of my, even though it happened 2 years ago, it's really weird. But she just was there, right, as though she was kneeling at my bedside, just like dead in my eyes. Like she was really, like she was looking at me before I woke up, like she was watching me sleep. And I remember waking up and having that same, okay, this is happening. And there was this memory of this woman. I was like, okay, it's just this woman. She'll go away. And she was still there. And I don't know what time passed in this thing. It's kind of unknown to me, but it felt like a good long time where we were just looking at each other, and it was just like this constant eye contact. And she didn't really do anything. She just stood there, like, passive. Like, there was no smile, there was no real emotion, which kind of made it weirder, because if someone's watching you sleep, they're either watching you sleep because, like, maybe, I don't know, it gets them off, or because they have some sort of horrible ulterior motive where they're going to, like, do something for you. But you expect an emotion. You expect some sort of something, whether it be, oh, God knows, of the gamut of emotions there are, but it wasn't any of them. It was just kind of like, I am here and I am watching you sleep, and now you've woken up and neither of us know what to do. And in that moment, I thought, I know what I'll do. And I reached out. I was like, whether it was conscious or whether it was some sort of instinct, it was like, I need to know if this is actually something that's happening to me. And I just tried to touch her. I tried to, like, see if I could put my hand on her face. I was my right arm, because I was on my side. And I kind of reached out and tried to touch her, and my hand just kind of went, phew. And I thought, okay, this is kind of weird, because surely if this isn't happening and this is a dream, the moment that happens, my body's going to go, surprise, it wasn't real, and she'd disappear. But I put my hand through her, like, and it went, phew, through it goes, and... And there was just, and then there was, and again, this could have literally happened within the space of 5 seconds or so, but to me it felt like a lifetime. But hand goes through, and there's the passive face, and really this is what I'm remembering now, because I remembered the experience of the girl, but it wasn't until your story that I remembered all of this, and it kind of came back. And it was this passive expression went to kind of this inquisitive look, as though this was something she had done many times before and had never received a reaction of, I'm going to try to touch you. Like, it was, she was expecting fear or just like, oh, go away. Or something, it was just this weird, oh. And it was that her expression matched what I felt when I, it was that, okay. It was exactly that, to me at least, it seemed like another couple of seconds of this intense eye contact, and then she just went away, and I freaked out in this sudden moment, and I thankfully at the age of 26, and I suppose as a 26-year-old man, I did the very manly thing of turning all the f***ing lights on that I could find. Like, and it's a hotel, right? So you're not entirely sure where the light switches are. So there's this comic moment of me running around, and I hit a light switch, and the bathroom light goes on. I'm like, that's not the light I want! And I find all these lights, and I kind of sit there. And it was a twin room. I'd been put in a twin room for some reason. So I was sat there in one bed where there's this other bed that before this girl had been stood in front of, and I could see this bed beyond her. And I was sat on this bed looking at this empty bed and looking at this empty gap where this girl had been. And I was kind of left in this situation of, how do I go to sleep now? What do I do? What was this? And I didn't have, like, the other two times, this is... The story's kind of combined in a tenuous way. I'd been able to call out for someone, right? There'd been somebody there, in both instances, my parents, to rationalise this for me and say, no, it was okay. And I was left in this situation where that was up to me now, for the first time in my life when I had been really, truly terrified. Like, there'd been times outside of dreams that I had been terrified. But this was the first... But there'd always been someone there, and this was the first time. It was just me in a different country, in a hotel, in a room that I did not know, with nobody else there to share this experience with, or to talk about it, or to try and, as I say, rationalize it. And it was just down to me. And I managed it just. I am still a skeptic. I still don't believe in ghosts. Like, I really don't. I know, like, there's the succubus and the thing, the night terrors, and the people would wake up and they would have this presence pressing down their chest, and there's science and there's reasons, and there's many wonderful, but they stick those things on your heads, and there's those little wiggly lines go on the monitors, and they go that bit of electricity is telling me why this happened, and all these things went through my head, but yet. Despite the fact that if anyone asked me, are there ghosts? Thanks to that story and all of those things that have just come up, tonight I will be a little bit scared when I go to sleep, because whether it be haystacks or floating ladies in rocking chairs, or really, really scary girls at my bedside, I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to wake up to. And that's my story.
Fantastic, fantastic. It's always good. Richard Stratton?
Yes.
Yes, excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for your candor and your willingness to... unburden that, like, with no provocation. So that's good. Okay, so we're now at the stage.
You were just listening to a story from our Scare Slam, our first ever Scare Slam that was put on at the Horse and Stables in Lambeth. Now coming up on the show, I've got a fantastic piece of new writing to play for you. It has been written by Christopher O'Shaughnessy, and this piece was directed by Alexander Pankhurst. The actor is David Bibby. This was performed most recently on Monday night at Blackshaw's New Writing Night, and here it is.
Concentrating on the road. I'm looking at the road and beyond it. It's very green. It's very, very green. Not that I'm meant to be looking, no, but it is green. And I like that vibrant fuck you moment. Yeah. When the landscape smiles and I smile right back. A kind of green spiritual orgasm. Driving can be a lonely business. Here to Edinburgh and back. Motorway dong, not the half of it. How I earn my bit. A journey through hell. And what do you expect for £21 a pop? It ain't the driving did my eyes in. No. That passage through hell. Toilet stops en route. Ecstatic at Scotch Corner. On my way. Ecstatic at Scotch Corner! On my way. You ever had an accident, you ask? Concentrating on that road, the journey. There, and then when it's dark. When it got dark. When it got very, very dark. The eyes, mad towards me, spinning out of control. The eyes, meteor-like, out of the night, and rushing like an ill-remembered dream past the shadows of my soul. Can't drive now. It's like a board game. The journey's epic, and the resolution, the blood and gore finale with local anaesthetic. Cornea. The way we picture what happens. Blindness. Eye. Sight. Me. In the operating chair. Waiting for the graft. Necessary graft. Odd how the sounds magnify. Smells increase. Judder and throb of the wheels. Sparks. Spinning. Sparks. And the moon. Floating like a dead child. Alone in the driver's seat. That diesel smell. And now swept down like a hovering pain, each town like a broken diamond necklace, and the silence, the stillness, driving through. Ever driven at night for a sleeping town? Night sea journey. Only it's tarmac. 60 miles an hour, upright, past Newcastle. Only way to earn a living, Jean says. Jean says, without my income, we'd all starve. Yeah. No roof over our heads, homeless. Homeless. Forever in the driver's seat. Listening alone to the shipping forecast. Back and forth, this way and that. And Daisy. Well, how could we ever afford it? How on earth could we ever have afforded? Shit. Have I ever had an accident, you ask? Have I ever had a... what? I'm in Edinburgh at 10 a.m. Should arrive at 8. It's a day case. Keratoplasty. Scissors and fork job. Never driven at night. For a sleeping town. Passengers asleep. Behind me. Baggage. When the headlights glide across the green verge, illuminating the edge, luminous in the darkness. I count wildflower names. Cow parsley, dandelion, buttercup, creeping buttercup, slow among the oil and the exhaust. Winter heliotrope, red campion, meadow cranesbill, knapweed, nettle, toad flax, bluebell, cuckoo pint, the rosemary drift of purple willow herb, screening a vista of distant pain. The passengers now sleep behind me. The one under the newspaper, the one holding his boyfriend's hand, the old woman drinking absinthe, and the nice young couple with their legs entwined, the others snoring in rhythm with the wheels, the small child dreaming in the long back seat, and the priest reading who knows what, not me. Concentrating on the road, I'm looking forever at the road and beyond it. It's National Express, the board game! For Fantasy Flight Games, if, you know, if they'll have it, if they'll take it, if they... Oh, I tell Jean the money I can make. The money I can make if it sells. Take a journey into the Dark Kingdom. Rescue the slimy princess from the monster. Everybody's doing it. Buying the fuckers. Slaying the farting dragon by the volcano. Leading the army of wraiths in battle. Smoke, fire, bangs, screams, whistles, pandemonium. Could be me. Into the forest, take off. Under Black Mountain, dwarves, goblins, werewolves. You ever had an accident, you ask? Then the inevitable toilet stop. Tea and toilet! They all need to go. Now. Go now! Save the onboard facility. 30 minutes. 30. Time for a fag and a leg stretch. Sandwich at the kiosk. Yes, it is sad the cafe is closed. Yeah, you might need a brolly in that rain. Now I can't look after your bloody iPhone. No, I don't have any spare change. And no, it can't be more than 30 minutes. What? We've got a fucking journey to finish, that's what. Report me. Lost 5 minutes, right. And off they go. Except for the dream child. And me, waiting for the cornea fix. Waiting. Really, goddamn waiting. Unsent letters, other end of the phone. Questions. The family asking questions, unspoken things, incommunicado. Waiting for the transplant. Waiting for that. Left it behind now, left it all behind. Gaining speed, I'm gaining speed, swift. A real success, the fork and scissors job. Like a bird picking at a worm. But could I drive back? But could I drive back? Laid off. Gaining speed as I remember. Swift like a pterodactyl with bright wings. The blur, the shadows are swift. Nothing. And those job centre queries, the stupid job centre queries. But if, what, how, come again. Come again tomorrow morning, we might have something. My wife almost cried. Your eyes. No known cause. Inherited. Not in my family. And Jean wondering, no words. The entry to the forgotten cave, wet footsteps by torchlight, sweating echoes, reflections in a phosphorescent pool, the welcome silence of a darkened space, and the bus turning, lumbering, rapid in moonlight. Sometimes I'd like to walk away from... I'd like to disengage while still en route. I'd just like to see the coach disappear. The person who's left behind, still driving, and rush to another station, another world. But the road I'm on is a different road. I'd like to walk away. And I will, all right. Sometimes I dream I'm still in that seat. Safe. Warm. Me. Driving along through the night.
You were just listening to a piece of new writing, which was played at the New Writing Night on Monday at the Hen and Chickens in Islington that Matt and I were both at. And that's sort of the end of the show, Matt.
It is.
The end of our podcast from my living room on a Thursday night, which is going out on the radio on a Sunday evening.
We live in weird times.
Very, very confusing. It's very confusing when we start talking about dates for me, Matt, because I don't know what's going on sometimes.
We are talking to you from the past.
From the past, but also the future, somehow. We're not.
My brain hurts.
I'm sorry. It's going to hurt even more now that I'm going to ask you this question. And this question is, what are you going to be reviewing in 2 weeks' time? Because really, it's the only reason people listen to this podcast is for your review.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
Probably
either one we've already talked about, mm-hmm. Girl on the Train. I think that's out fairly soon.
Sure.
Or the movie that Ellie has been talking about for months, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children,
yes.
is actually out soon.
Okay, we could do that.
Yeah.
Or
there's another The Girl movie, okay, Girl with All the Gifts, which is a sort of not quite a zombie movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Lots of girls, girl movies.
Yeah, I saw a book table in a bookshop just piled high with books that all started with the girl or the girl who, which the bookseller had just labelled, I've got a name.
Oh, that's really funny.
So all those books are being adapted apparently. So yeah, it's one of the girl movies or mm-hmm. the Peculiar Children, or what were you about to say?
Well, I was going to say the thing that I made you watch just recently, just before we started recording this very podcast.
Oh, yes.
There is a ridiculous film coming out. It actually might already be out, but it's called The Boy, and it's a horror film. And if you want to have a real big lol on...
It looks basically like a cross between Gremlins and every like creepy ventriloquist doll movie that's ever been made.
It's like a horror movie trying really hard to be scary, I think.
Yeah.
But then in the trailer showing you all the jump scares, but also the premise is absolutely ridiculous, and it's about a doll.
Called Brahms.
Called Brahms. He's really posh. He's got really posh parents. But they just have a doll, and then they get a... an au pair, I guess you would call her.
To look after the doll.
The doll, yeah. But you can't break. You can't. Oh, poor Matt, you're so...
I made it through the whole show.
You did, you were
coughed,
doing so
only
well.
Only coughed right at the end there,
oh,
I'm sorry.
It's okay, we'll forgive you. But yeah, so we
could... The boy made me.
We could do... This actually, this conversation between us makes no sense because no one else has seen the trailer. Please go and watch the trailer for The Boy because then this conversation will make more sense to you and we won't sound like crazy people.
Someone will tweet it.
We'll tweet it. I'll tweet it. I don't even use Twitter, but I'll tweet it.
Your Twitter account is just going to be years of nothing and then the trailer for The Boy.
It's very confusing to people. If you don't see The Boy, I will. So there.
All right.
Good. We have a decision. The last thing that I need to tell you on this episode of the Lecture Arts Hour is the fact that we have a fantastic production coming up, which is, again, part of the London Horror Festival. This is Black Shuck. It's a transfer. We've done it already this year. We did it at the Bedford as a part of WAF, but it's back. It's back. It's going to be at the Old Red Lion Theatre, the same as where the Scare Slam will be, from the 11th to the 15th of October.
And this is a show that, unlike The Boy, is scary but trying to be a bit funny as well, rather than unintentionally funny.
I thought you were going to say, unlike The Boy, it's good. Yeah, that also is correct.
I don't want to prejudge the boy.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure it's going to be awful, but whatever.
But I've seen Black Shark and I know that's good.
Yeah, we know that Black Shark is not awful, so you should definitely come and see it. It starts at 7 o'clock on those dates. It is £12 for a ticket, sorry, from the 11th to the 15th of October. We'll be there. My husband's in it. Matt, you'll probably come and see it again, won't you?
I definitely will.
Yeah. It's always nice seeing something in a different venue, even if you've seen it before. It's kind of like, it's always a bit different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you saw it before,
well,
come see it
theater.
Again.
You see it twice in the same venue, it'll still be different.
Exactly. It's different every night because it's live, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I have a little fun fact, actually, about theater. I've just moved to a new office, and you know how I was talking and raving about Matilda a couple of shows ago? I see the kids from Matilda waiting outside the Cambridge Theater all the time.
Oh, my God.
It's like I got starstruck by six-year-olds yesterday.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. Have you got their autographs yet?
No, because they just look so cute. Like, they're just waiting outside, just being like, oh, you know, just going to my job as an actor on the West End, which just blows my mind. But yeah, I just thought I'd throw that little fun fact in there. So if anyone else wants to come and, like, stare at the... This is getting weird. Stare at the kids.
I think... is this breaking down your credentials as the, like, the non-arts person on the Arts Hour? If you're now, like, you're in, like, the West End theatre scene now. You're mixing with the Matilda kids.
Not really. I'm more of a media type trying to avoid the West End theatre scene, I would probably say. But
okay.
Still getting starstruck by the Matilda kids. So, you know, that's all good. Anyway, that's all we have time for on this episode of the Black Shore Arts Hour. Come and see our fantastic productions that are on as part of the London Horror Festival. We'll be talking about them until they're on. So, you know, you won't miss out on all the information. Thank you, Matt, for coming along and being...
Thanks for bearing with me.
You've done a great job. You're still a little bit ill, but you've made the effort, and we appreciate that. A final
there
cough to see
that's,
us...
That's my bye for the night.
Yeah, that's going to see us through to the end of the episode. Good night, everyone.
Good night.